I'm Kate Remington talking with Stanford Symphony Orchestra's conductor Eckhart Proy about a really original, wonderful program they've got coming up on Saturday, March 4th and Sunday, March 5th, Venetian Carnival. And Eckhart, it's always great to have a chance to catch up with you.
Great to be here.
You've put together such a really intriguing program, kind of around Venice. I would say probably Venice was the focus of this program, right?
Oh, definitely. And I always wanted to go to Venice for their carnival. And the carnival season is always end of February, beginning of March. So actually this year it's February 28th. And so it's almost really coincided with the concert. So I thought, you know, why don't we explore music from Venice? Because it was very influential at the time. We just don't really play that often anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And so many of the pieces, you've got the Albinoni Adagio, music from Monteverdi, and of course, Vivaldi, and a canzona from Gabrielli as well. And it really shines a spotlight on what an incredible group of composers in particular were working during the Renaissance and the early Baroque.
And I think they were all, you know, true revolutionaries, you know, like Monteverdi pioneering opera, Gabrielli really introducing the concept of stereo, you know, two groups placed on a balcony opposite each other, playing towards each other. And these, I mean, both of these composers had huge impact on the following generations. Also Vivaldi, huge influence on Johann Sebastian Bach and also in Handel. I mean, Bach was copying Vivaldi left and right and arranging. And so, I mean, it's just, we usually look at, or frequently look at composers isolated. But here, if we have a whole bunch of people, you can see how things developed and how things influenced each other's, and in particular, in this case, how things got started.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think there are so many examples in Europe of how a particular place like Venice just became this sort of epicenter of a really incredible kind of school or way of writing music. And you, because you've got music from earlier composers, Monteverdi and Gabrielli, along with Vivaldi, you can kind of see that evolution too, which is really cool.
And I think also that you never really know why things happen. I mean, it was a place of wealth. It was a place that was very well connected. It was the center of Europe, and I think that's probably why so much money was there, so much support for the arts, and so much need, and so. It's just really, I think it's a phenomenal place, because usually we look at Venice because of its architecture, because of its art, because of its political and historic significance. But here in music, I think there is a lot of really interesting stuff. And in particular, when you look like at Monteverdi, which is even nowadays, by the way, in May, it's his, you know, 450th anniversary this year. It's pretty old. And yet, when you listen to it, it is so alive, it is so dramatic, and so original in many ways, still nowadays. And I find that fascinating. If you really bridge four centuries, and you listen to that music that is so ancient, really ancient, and you can still connect to that, you know, now in the 21st century, I think it's really, really amazing.
It is. And you mentioned also the importance of architecture in Venice, which is absolutely true. Just the engineering feat of building the city in the first place. But St. Mark's Cathedral in particular has this incredibly long delay. It's such a cavernous space. And I think the way Gabrielli worked out a way of kind of using it and exploiting it for, as you mentioned, this stereo effect, it's really incredible.
I think, you know, it's an interesting space because it is very dark in a way, and it has these balconies there. And when you are there, and I've been there several times, even with people talking very quietly, it's very resonant. I mean, you really can hear you know, a lot of detail, despite actually the delay in sound, and I think, you know, that was really intriguing. And if you think that surround sound was invented a couple hundred years ago, it's kind of surprising that it hasn't caught on, or it did catch on, you know, because Heinrich Schütz and Händel also. I mean, the Concerto Grosso system also, you know, it's based on the same on a similar idea that you have two groups playing with each other and towards each other, and then it kind of with the classical and romantic era that kind of vanished, and then you know surround sound just came up a couple of decades ago in technological terms, but even nowadays, it's kind of something that has not really captivated the imagination of composers.
Yeah, well, have you staged it at the Palace Theater to kind of recreate that effect with members of the orchestra around in with the audience, or are you just all on?
We will see what we can do. You know, it's a very different space. It's a very different hall. There's a lot of the delay is actually incredible between balcony and stage, and even from one side of the balcony to the other. So we'll have to experiment what we can do. Maybe we just put them on the balcony, for sure on the balcony, to have like a little bit different idea, because you know we're always so used to the stage in front of us, which we like because we can also see it. We can see it, but then we also don't like it because it is a stage. And also I think the visual overrides what we hear. So if you have something in your back and you hear, and the sound comes from the back, you all of a sudden listen, I think, in a very different way because you can't see it. And I think it's I think our perception actually is quite enhanced when we don't see. And I find this as an experiment. And also as an experience, it's an interesting thing to do from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got a couple of pieces from Vivaldi, the Goldfinch Concerto featuring Elizabeth Mann, and then the Gloria, that joyful, joyful setting of the Gloria with the Greenwich Choral Society. And again, that's such a great choice because it does, you know, it shifts from dark to light. It's not like nonstop happiness, and yet it's really just such a, it's going to leave the audience, I think, with a really great feeling.
I mean, he was a priest after all, you know. I mean, he was known as the Red Priest because of his hair, but didn't really want to be a priest. I think he wanted to rather make music and compose and play, and so he had definitely a very strong connection to the text of the Gloria. But his music in general has always this underlying pulsation. Not necessarily joy, but even if it's dramatic, it always has a forward motion to it. And that's, I think, why it's so successful nowadays, because we feed on the underlying rhythm of music. I mean, I think that's our generation. You know, we need the pulse, we need the oomph, we need that pulsation, and I think that is Vivaldi's really, really strong point. And this Vivaldi in this Gloria is great because it has these extremes of both tempo and atmosphere. That is these blocks all of a sudden where it sounds like almost like ancient music, and then it's forward looking to Bach in many ways, and then it's typical Vivaldi stuff that is just so joyful and forward moving. I think it's famous for a reason, you know, this Gloria, and we've been periodically, you know, over my tenure, always been working together with the Greenwich Choral Society. It's always a lot of fun to do that, and you know, when you talk about Vivaldi concertos, you usually think about, you know, his many violin concertos, and so I thought, you know, why always play the same stuff? Let's look at the flute concerto, which is all really good stuff. His concertos for trumpets and for cellos and so, but we have never really done, as far as I can remember, a flute concerto. So I thought it's totally time to do that. And Elizabeth Mann is our principal flute player. She is a phenomenal flutist, and so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then you've got pieces from a couple of ringers, I guess, the Adagietto from Mahler's Fifth Symphony, and then the Pulcinella Suite from Stravinsky, which also is a reference to carnival time. It's sort of the Commedia dell'arte characters that were always popular during carnival. And again, the little throwback with that, with the Stravinsky, is that he used 18th century material, which is just so cool.
Yeah, and so at first we thought he used these sketches from one single composer. Now it turns out that he didn't. That there was actually, he thought that it was one composer, but there was actually like a whole bunch of composers whose sketches he used as a groundwork for the Pulcinella. One of which was also a Venetian composer, but he's actually on this program because I will never forget my surprise. I was in Venice for my first time. I went to this island called San Michele, which is a little further away from Venice, not too far. But, you know, you take this boat and it's basically a cemetery island. That's where all there is, basically a big graveyard. And I walked around, then I saw the sign Stravinsky, and I was totally surprised. And there is Stravinsky. He's buried in Venice.
Wow.
And so for me, together with Diaghilev, and so for me, there's this connection of Stravinsky and Venice, and of course Commedia dell'arte, and all these phenomenal characters, the Venetian composer that he used, and also the combination of old and new. I mean, he was so original. It's so original, and the Mahler, you know, and it's also great to have some different colors on the program. You cannot just do Renaissance music, and so the Mahler, the Adagietto, which is so famous in even the popular canon, is because of the movie Death in Venice. And, you know, and it captures a certain atmosphere, I think, that one can feel in Venice at certain times of the day, in the early morning or when it's really raining or so. And so it's nice to have, among the Renaissance composers, the Gabriele, Monteverdi, and the Vivaldi, have some other flavors in there that just breaks it up a little bit. And so the Mahler is just such a phenomenal and standalone piece, this Adagietto, and then Pulcinella Suite is just pure fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great. And it's such an interesting way of programming a concert. And Eckhart, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time and telling us about it.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.